Hello and welcome to Birth as We Know It. I am your podcast host, Kiona Nessenbaum. I have experienced birth as a doula, a student midwife, and as a mother of three amazing children with my husband and high school sweetheart by my side. After attending over 130 births, including my own, I've realized that each birth experience is truly unique. So make sure you subscribe and join me every week as we are guided through many different birth experiences through the lens of the storyteller. Please be aware that some of the stories can be triggering to hear, so feel free to pause, take a breath, and come back and listen whenever you're ready. With that said, let's prep ourselves to dive deep and get detailed about what really happens in the birth space. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and has no intention of giving or replacing any medical advice. All advice that is given on the podcast is from the personal experiences of the storytellers. All medical or health-related questions should be directed to your licensed provider. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Birth as We Know It podcast. Today, I will be interviewing Sarah Zarol, who is the owner and co-founder of Birth Made Mindful. This Birth Made Mindful business is focused on helping prepare families for labor and birth. They offer courses, they have affirmation cards, and they do a lot of great things. She's a co-founder with Christina Packard and Carly Crowther. So welcome, Sarah. Thanks for joining the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. I would love to dive right in and talk about who you are, what you do, and tell us a little bit about yourself and who's in your family.
Wonderful. So I'm Sarah. My husband is Bob, and we have three young boys. They're 5, 3, and 1. And I feel like my life has just completely transformed the last couple of years, going from, you know, a single working woman to then getting married. And then now, you know, kind of being that mother hen that has a lot more responsibilities, you know, raising a family and preparing for birth.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So before we dive into your pregnancy and birth experiences, have you ever attended a birth prior to experiencing your own labor and births?
I was able to see my sister very shortly after a few of her babies were born. She is the proud mother of 5 and is pregnant with her 6th baby this summer.
Nice.
And so I was able to be there right after, but not for the actual birth.
Oh, that's okay. That's awesome. I think it's great that you were able to be there immediately after as well. Support makes a big difference. So let's go ahead and dive into your personal experiences. So when you were first finding out about your pregnancy, were you trying to become pregnant? Was it a surprise? Were you excited, sad? How did you feel?
Yeah, for each of our sons that were born, they were all planned and happened pretty quickly. You know, like soon after we removed the goalie, we were pregnant and excited for each of them. Just felt like it was time to continue to grow our family and to welcome another child into our home. So that was always an exciting, you know, part of the adventure.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. So when you became pregnant with your first, throughout your first pregnancy, did you have any specific health conditions or any cravings that you fell into?
Oh man, I thought it was really weird the type of cravings that I would have. One of them was a lime popsicle. And of course, it was late at night and I made my husband go out to the store and buy those popsicles for me, bring them back. I think those salty Lay's potato chips were something that I always needed. And then bless Chick-fil-A, because it was always a chicken sandwich that
nice.
I wanted.
Yeah, that's a pretty good chicken sandwich. So good. That's awesome. And so as you got further into your pregnancy, how did you feel throughout your pregnancy? And were you aware of like where you wanted to birth, or did you have a plan?
I think from the start, I always wanted to explore, you know, just kind of an unmedicated delivery. We started touring different facilities and I was able to kind of settle on selecting a midwife at a hospital. That was the one that my husband felt like would be kind of the best experience for us. I did tour some birth centers initially and wanted to go that route. you know, but he felt a little bit more secure if we still had the midwifery care, but then we were at a hospital. And maybe that was serendipitous because our first delivery did end up being a C-section.
Let's talk more about that. First, I want to mention, I think it's a good middle ground, you know, to like be in midwifery care at a hospital if you and your partner were really not sure, you know, and not really realizing like where you wanted to be, and then meeting in the middle was really nice. I think that's good. But bouncing back forward, let's talk more about your birth with your first, and how it ended up in a C-section. It sounds like it wasn't a planned C-section, so.
Not at all. So with our first baby, my water broke, I would say, prematurely. So I had no signs of labor. I was in my 38th week of pregnancy, and I kept hearing that, you know, for a first-time mom, you're always going to go over. And right. So I was really surprised when I woke up with that pop and that gush of water and thought, I think my water just broke. I was also pretty relieved that I was at home because I had been afraid that it would happen at work or that I would, you know, be riding the bus somewhere. But we called our midwife and she encouraged us to rest a little bit and kind of see if labor would start on its own. And then just to come in kind of like at the crack of dawn the next morning. So we went into the hospital and they did check. My water had broken, but I wasn't dilated at all. I was maybe like, you know, a half centimeter dilated. And I think this was a little disappointing at first because, you know, like I didn't want to have to deal with any sort of like intervention. But then my midwife said, you know, you might need an epidural, you might need, you know, something to help you along. And and that's kind of exactly what happened. After a couple of hours, they put me on Pitocin. The contractions were nice and strong. You know, there were times when I thought, oh, this is definitely happening. And then even after about 24 hours, I was still only dilated to 2 centimeters. And we had been avoiding cervical checks. And, you know, that was probably a good choice. But it was the next day that they did a check and kind of noticed that he was in the wrong position. He was sunny side up.
Okay.
They called the OB that was, you know, part of the hospital group to come on in. And, you know, he mentioned that we might need to do a C-section. My heart just totally dropped, you know, because I hadn't wanted that as part of my plan. And yet I knew that if that was what was best, you know, then we'd go forward. So after about 40 hours of labor, we ended up having a C-section and he was sunny side up, and then ended up having a pretty low Apgar score. I'm not sure if it was just, you know, so many hours of being on Pitocin and like trying to get him to come. And so he was in the NICU for a couple of days after that.
Okay. Yeah. Man, that's like that sounds like a very hard decision to make, but also understanding because with 40 hours of labor, you know, and still realizing that baby was sunny side up and only 2 centimeters dilated, I can understand the heart drop in realizing that a C-section needed to be had. And I think that it's important for listeners to know that's something that was completely out of your control, right? So there's something that was completely out of your control and you just had to go with the flow, even though that wasn't your plan.
Exactly. I think I immediately, you know, as we were discussing it afterwards and I went in for my 6-week appointment, you know, started asking them about my chances for a VBAC, you know, just thinking maybe next time around it can be different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's awesome. And so, in the NICU stay, was he in the NICU for a long time? Did you just say only a few days or?
He was only there for a few days. They wanted to make sure that his blood sugars looked good. You know, so I think it did have an effect with like our breastfeeding. We kind of got off to a rocky start because I wasn't able to be with him the first 2 days. I was kind of pumping on my own, trying to make everything work. And so it did take us a couple of weeks to establish breastfeeding with him because of that. But then everything looked great as far as his, you know, like his levels, all of his internal organs, everything was perfect, you know, at the same time that we were being discharged.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's beautiful. I'm happy to hear that everything went well and he got all the care that he needed. And it sounds like your breastfeeding relationship with him was a little bit hard in the beginning, but you guys ended up doing well when you guys got home.
Yeah. It took a couple of weeks to make sure that he knew how to latch and that both sides were good for him.
Right.
And then I was just able to pump and breastfeed him for quite some time. So that was good.
Great. That's awesome. That's great. And then so moving into your next pregnancy, it sounds like you touched on it a little bit. You went to your 6-week appointment talking about your potential chances of having a VBAC. So let's dive into your second pregnancy and how was it finding out about him?
Yeah, we were so excited to find out that we were pregnant again. And as I went back to, you know, the same midwife who had delivered our first son, she mentioned that in their hospital system that she wouldn't be able to attend me, that it would have to be an OB from the start, you know, in case they needed to do another surgery. So I was transferred over to another gal and had a pretty good relationship. I started thinking about hiring a doula because I noticed, you know, just like a couple of comments or whatnot during the process, but was feeling encouraged that, you know, like that I could have a VBAC. The VBAC calculator never is a friend when you're looking at percentages that way. But it was actually just a couple of days before his due date that my obstetrician then told me that she wouldn't be able to support me in a vaginal delivery. So the tone kind of shifted and, you know, she mentioned if I had failure to progress the first time that I would have failure to progress again and that she couldn't be at the hospital waiting for me to labor and just said, you know, like, I'm happy to schedule a repeat C-section, you know, but I won't be able to support you in a vaginal delivery. And I was completely shocked because that's not what I anticipated for my very last appointment before I was supposed to, you know, be going into labor. But I knew as I left that appointment that I would not be able to deliver with her, that, you know, the safety and the support that I needed wouldn't be there. So I immediately called my husband. I called my doula next. And it was during that conversation that all of the stars aligned. She was also training to become a midwife. So she was in midwifery school herself and said, maybe my attending midwife can take you on. I actually went to like a couple of different doctor's offices, you know, like in between, and none of them would take me on with just, you know, a couple of days left. So finding that midwife was a godsend. She met with us the following morning. We talked about all of the risks. We talked about what might happen if there were signs of uterine rupture. You know, she let me know that there wouldn't be any, you know, sort of pain medication that could be offered. And that was something that was a little bit scary because I had just kind of planned that I would do everything I could for a VBAC. And so if that meant that I needed the epidural, if that meant that, you know, I needed help along the way, that I would take it. But now birthing at a birth center, just with a midwife, now it was, you know, a completely different experience. And I had some work to do those next couple of days of just really preparing my heart, preparing my mind, recognizing, you know, that I wasn't a failure if we had to transfer, that, you know, the most important thing about that delivery was that I was given the chance to try.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't necessarily about the outcome. I just didn't want to deny myself the opportunity, especially since finding a provider that's able to support you after two C-sections for a VBAC is there's less chance that you're going to find that.
Yeah.
And so I knew that this was my shot if I was going to have that VBAC. So labor kind of started, it was about 3 days after our due date. So, you know, your mind starts thinking, is this ever going to happen? And yet I felt the contractions start to ramp up a couple of hours later, you know, they were a good 5 minutes apart and I thought, okay, this is happening. We called my doula and she came over. As she looked in the situation, she thought, let's go to the birth center. I think you might be ready. So as we went to the birth center, I was totally excited. I kind of like, I put on my swimming suit top so that I could get in the tub. I was all ready to go. And then the first check showed that we were only at 4 centimeters. Honestly, I was excited because that's more progress than I had ever made before. But I also felt like maybe something was wrong because I had been laboring for quite some time and I thought that I had been farther along. So in that check, she found that he was once again sunny side up, which was kind of a trigger for me. I didn't want the same outcome. And so we started doing a couple of different measures, some belly lifts. And then they mentioned, maybe we should go and visit your chiropractor. So we called him. He had an appointment a couple of hours later. And my husband was a little bit nervous for us to leave the birthing center, but we took our doula with us. And so we knew if anything happened, you know, she was trained and could help us if my water broke. So my water hadn't broken yet with him.
Okay.
We'd been in labor for about 24 hours when we went to the chiropractor. And, you know, he did the hip openers, made sure that everything was nice and relaxed and open. And then as we went back to the birthing center, we kind of took a look and my midwife, you know, noticed that the baby had dropped and shifted. I was 8 centimeters along and she suggested that we break my water. So as I sat on the birthing stool, she was like, give him a little push for me. And as I pushed, my water just broke all on its own.
Nice.
Yeah. So I felt like I really had to find my inner peace at that point because it had been a long time. I was starting to get tired. And, you know, I knew that the real experience was, you know, underway. So I got in the tub immediately when my feet touched the water. I had that urge to push. And and so my midwife just said, like, go ahead, you know, like, you know, start doing it. A couple of pushes in, you know, she's like, you're not pushing, you're running away from it. And that made me so mad because I thought, I'm pushing as much as I can. Like, I want this to happen. You know, like, of course, at that point in your labor, you almost feel like you're in a panic because, you know, you can breathe through the contractions. But then once you feel that urge to push, it's a different level of discomfort, right? The pain starts to get a little more real. So she ended up doing a quick check of his heartbeat and noticed that it was decelerating. So they were like, let's get out of the tub. You know, you need to push on the bed. And my midwife just looked me in the eyes and said, like, you've got to push this baby out right now. So with that command, I just like pushed with all of my might. And, you know, like two contractions later, he was born. And I just felt like the most surge of energy that I think I probably ever felt in my whole life. Like, it was just amazing to have that experience. Like, it literally felt like just the blink of an eye that he was inside of me and I was pregnant. And then the next push, he was out.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason that his heart had some decels was that the cord was wrapped around his neck. So they just quickly unwound him and then they placed him on my stomach and he was able to latch immediately. He was like the best nurser right from the start.
Beautiful.
And we just had like this beautiful, you know, golden hour together. And just really feeling that celebration, you know, that we are able to have that VBAC. It was so amazing. I don't think I felt tired for like the first 2 days because I was
just on a high.
I was on that birth high and I thought like, oh man, even though that was a long labor. And even though I had to go to the chiropractor, you know, like it didn't feel like he was really getting into position on his own. I felt like, oh, that's how birth should be. And I really felt supported with my team, with my doula and my midwife. And I thought, okay, when I have my next baby, like this is the experience that I want to go for. And luckily I was able to birth with that same midwife and we elected to have a home birth, which was even more incredible. If you can imagine, if you can believe it. But the reason why I decided that I would choose to have our third baby at home instead of, you know, heading back over to that beautiful birth center was because I didn't want to have to worry about timing. I felt like there's always that question, like, am I too soon to go to the hospital? Like, what if I'm not far enough along? You know, like, will they send me home or will I just be stuck there and then be on the clock? You know, like you never want to feel like somebody's waiting for you because you start to tell yourself in your mind that it's not going fast enough.
Yeah.
And so I recognize that if I'm at home, then I never have to worry about timing. You know, our midwife can come and do a quick check. And if I still need more time, then she could, you know, head back to her office and come back later. And so with the delivery of our third son, He was actually born like the same exact time, like 40 and 3 days, just like our other son was.
Nice. I guess
that's just how long my body takes.
Yeah.
And it just was so similar. Like I could just start to feel the surges. I knew that it was coming. But this time around, I just felt like all that I want is to experience love during this labor. Like I just want to love every minute of this. And so I was like thinking about his beautiful eyes and like, you know, wondering what his little toes and his fingers would look like.
So sweet. Yeah.
And I just wanted to like welcome every moment. I think I had done a lot of work in between, you know, babies 1 and 2 to learn about VBAC. But then between babies 2 and 3 is when my sisters and I, you know, developed our courses. I was certified as a doula myself. And so I really started diving deep into, you know, different relaxation techniques. But then I also realized that a lot of labor is about your mental preparation and not wishing away the contraction. It's actually about working with it. And so during this experience, like feeling each of those contractions, I just wanted to focus all of my energy like down and out as I was feeling each sensation. Like I knew that I couldn't really control how long I would be in labor, but as they say with like a lot of hard things, like the only way out is through. And so I just knew that if I can relax my body, if I can welcome each contraction and just survive like these 60 seconds, you know, before I'll get a little break, you know, that my baby would then be that prize at the end.
Right.
And so my third labor was so fast. His positioning must have been perfect because I went to our guest room about 3 a.m. because I realized that I was kind of like wiggling around. I didn't want to wake up my husband. And so I woke up around 7 o'clock. I had been kind of having contractions, you know, off and on for a while, but it was at 7 a.m. that I really felt like I needed some help and that things might be progressing. And so when our midwife came and checked me, you know, around 10 a.m., she said, "You're already at 8 centimeters. Like it's
that
time.
Is so to, beautiful.
It's time to fill up the birth tub." And so, you know, my cute husband had a lot of work. He was filling up the birth tub. He called our birth photographer to come over and, you know, she made an incredibly beautiful video for our family. Aww, and the water hadn't broken yet. And so I just got in the tub and relaxed. And my husband brought me like this smoothie. The house was so quiet. Like my birth team, they were all present. They were getting the place ready, but there wasn't any coaching. There wasn't any, you know, like there wasn't a sense of urgency. You know, it was just like, this is, you know, this is what birth should be. Like, we're just here. We're in your home. I had sent my toddlers to my mother-in-law's house, you know, because I knew that I wanted to just have the place to ourselves. And
And then
I felt that sensation again, that urge to push. And doing a couple practice pushes, we could hear the water break and it was all clear. And I just felt like, I'm just going to push with all my might this time. You know, like I don't want my midwife to have to tell me that I was running away. Of course, I didn't want to tear either. And so I knew that I could kind of like breathe as I was pushing. But I wanted to meet my baby. And I knew that if I continued to just, you know, really feel that sensation of like, okay, down and out, like breathe him down and out, then he would be born. So after a couple more pushes, my midwife said, like, just stand up a little for me. And so I think she had noticed that maybe his positioning needed a little tweaking. And so as I stood up, he had a little shoulder dystocia and he was able to just kind of rotate and come out. So he wasn't born underwater, but I was still in the birth tub and, you know, the same thing. They just kind of rubbed his back and then placed him on my belly. And he had these like beautiful, like big lips and just like the cutest little cry. It's amazing to me just, you know, like when that baby is born, the energy that comes with their being, with their spirit and their presence. And it was just so wonderful to be in our own home. And, you know, we cuddled him for a little bit in the pool And then I birthed the placenta just there on our couch.
Nice.
And I just got to like hold him and nurse him and just have like a really amazing bonding experience, not having anywhere else to go. You know, they helped me walk up to our bedroom and get all cozy with him in the bed. And it just felt like a really empowering experience being at our home. I felt mm-hmm. like the queen of my environment. And I know that home birth isn't an option for everyone.
Right.
But yeah. I just felt like this huge sense of gratitude for my birth team. I felt grateful that everything was able to kind of just be textbook in that sense. You know, mm-hmm. I had done a lot of mental work with the possibility of a transfer and just mm-hmm. realizing that there wasn't any element of trauma if we needed to transfer, because my team was skilled. They knew exactly what signs to look for. Mm-hmm. And even when people transfer after a baby is born, you know, like they're seeking the help that's necessary. And I didn't feel any sort of, you know, of angst about birthing at home, which I think made the labor itself just be able to transcend as it did, because I was able to get rid of any fear that something would go wrong. I mean, I had had a C-section, I had had a vaginal birth. And so I thought, you know, if this needs to be a C-section, then it will be. If mm-hmm. it can be a vaginal birth, then that will be wonderful for me. You know, having experienced both recoveries, I was baffled at how much better it was, you know, with a VBAC. And I just felt like, you know, my heart's desire to have that labor full of love was met. And it really made me realize that helping other families, you know, to achieve this sense of having a mindful birth, of understanding the process of getting education, of knowing the signs to look for if something were to go wrong. I mean, like, birth is a huge risk. It's a risk for everybody involved, for the family, for the doctors, you know, for your midwife or your doula. And yet we have to face that risk. We have to understand, you know, like, what's our plan, our backup plan, and even maybe a plan C, and then just kind of move through that situation as best we can. And I know, because my third story, you know, just feels like this enchanting story, then other people might say, well, that's easy for you to say, you know, but I also feel like I had the pain of a C-section recovery. You know, I had felt that feeling of immense pain in healing, you know, like the day after and 2 days after your C-section, you know, if you fall behind on your meds, you're in a lot of pain, and it can be like really foggy having to be on all those meds. And so for me, I really feel passionate that women who want to have a VBAC should be given the chance. And to find a provider that's supportive, it's hard. And yet it's so necessary, because without a person by your side telling you can do it, looking you in the eye and, you know, encouraging you to continue through what might feel like a lengthy process, you know, like, I think it's really unfortunate that when you're in the hospital setting, that there are so many protocols and checks and, oh, like if your labor has stalled for, you know, 4 to 6 hours, then something must be wrong. But like, our bodies just aren't created that way. There's no internal clock or alarm that says that you have to make a certain amount of cervical dilation within a certain amount of time. And so just being able to, you know, have that freedom of not worrying how long it took. And yet it was my fastest delivery, you know, like, I think it's a little bit ironic how, because I had the thought like, this could take all day and all night, you know, like, we've got nowhere to be. I just wanted to rest as much as I could in case it was long again, that I wasn't exhausting myself through labor. And maybe that mindset of just, you know, calm and serenity helped for everything to move forward. You know, like, my body could perform in the best way that it needed to, because I felt safe. I felt secure, and I had that feeling of love all around me.
Yeah, you had your team around you. Did you have a doula with your third birth as well?
I didn't actually hire a doula. I know in one comment someone said, well, even if you're a doula yourself, you can't doula yourself.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of questions, like if I should hire somebody to come and help me. But we just made the decision that we would, you know, go forward. And I had studied a lot of techniques of, you know, the things that worked. And for my second delivery, I used a TENS unit quite a bit to kind of counteract that feeling. I had it placed on my back. But then for my third son, when I applied the TENS unit, it wasn't comfortable. And so it was weird. It was like, okay, I guess a different delivery requires different skills. And, you know, I just kind of wanted gravity to help me. So I tried to stay upright a little bit more during that labor process. And I did repeat my affirmations out loud this time around so that I could reinforce what my body knew, but my mind needed to like help be in the zone as well. And so I was, you know, I was trying to welcome that baby and like show him that we were ready for him. And I think that being in the right state of mind, you know, like did help the process. Of course, like if he was in the wrong position, it probably could have also been a long labor or required interventions. You know, like sometimes our mindset isn't all that's needed for an amazing birth. You know, we do recognize the need for help when we need it. So there's just so many nuances in birth that I love, and I love being able to help other families to prepare and to feel like the outcome of their birth makes them feel joyous.
Yeah, I 100% agree with all things said. There is so much to unpack there with your two birth experiences. I wanted to touch on, like, how did you feel inside? Because so during your second labor, you said when you reached 4 centimeters, you were still happy because it was further than when you, further than the 2 centimeters you had gotten to in your first. How did it feel when you found out you were 8 centimeters with your third?
It was unreal. Honestly, I thought that I would have a long labor again. I thought that my body just took more time and I would be up all night laboring all day, maybe have him that night, maybe it would be the next day. Like I just was like a little bit in shock. I actually told my midwife, like, you know, when you do your first check, you don't have to tell me, you know, like the result, you like, we'll just kind of keep that information as like a nice to know type of thing, you know, because I thought, I don't want my body to feel like it's not doing the best job it can. And so I knew that if she checked me and I was like 4 centimeters again, and she's like, oh, you're only 4 centimeters, that I might feel a little defeated. And I didn't want those feelings to like to stop the oxytocin and, you know, all of the hormones that were engaging together. But when she told me like, well, now it's time to blow up the birth tub, then I thought, oh, wait, is this happening? And that's when she told me like, you're at 8 centimeters.
Oh, that's so nice. Cause then you're like, oh, there's another indication. She said I got to blow up the tub, which means we're actually closer than I thought I was. That's a good feeling. That's a good feeling. That's really, really great. And I also really like how you mentioned that you went to the chiropractor as you were in labor with your second. I think that is so cool. Did your chiropractor react in any specific way when he found out you were in labor?
Let's see. Well, I had been seeing him for a couple of weeks, you know, like per the recommendation of my doula. You know, she mentioned the last couple of weeks are the most important to just remain loose and open, making sure everything is aligned. And I think I asked him like at what point we would need our last, you know, like our last adjustment. And he said, oh, like call me anytime. I think he was a little surprised, like when we showed up and I was in labor, and then it's like, I'd be on the bed, but needed to stand for like, to have optimum comfort during my contractions. And so then I'd be like kind of slow dancing with my husband, doing my little song. Like there's always this low rumble that I do when I'm dealing with my contractions, but he was just so gracious. And, you know, like he's not the kind of chiropractor who just does like a couple pops and sends you on your way. He wasn't Webster certified, but his technique always used massage. Mm-hmm. And so you would really feel like that alignment and that opening of everything after seeing him. And luckily, you know, like everything that needed to fall into place just really did. So for my third baby, I also went back to him and had like two adjustments the week that he was born. Mm-hmm. But this time around didn't have to go see him during the event.
Right.
I'm sure he thought, I'm going to have to charge you extra for this.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So did you let him know that he was a big help in your second?
Absolutely. We took him, a bread basket and just said, thank you so much. Like, I really feel like I probably couldn't have done it without him. And mm-hmm. certainly if I had been in a hospital setting, you know, like they wouldn't have let me leave and do a chiropractic mm-hmm. adjustment. And so I definitely, you know, like I sing the praises of chiropractors every day.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. I think it's amazing. And I love how he was just like, yeah, okay, let's do it. You know, and he was willing to work with you. I think that's fantastic. there was one other thing. Oh, you had mentioned that your son came out with a nuchal cord. So it was wrapped around his neck. And outside of the heart rate D-cells, was there any other indication at all throughout your pregnancy that that was present?
I don't think so. I had been under the care of an OB, and so mm-hmm. we had done, you know, the standard ultrasounds. I don't think it was ever evident then. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that his heart rate ever gave an indication that something would happen. So maybe it was in the shifting of him, like, you know, mm-hmm. descending. But mm-hmm. but yeah, he had that cord wrapped around a couple of times that they just had to kind of unwrap.
Yeah. Well, good thing his cord was long enough, right? to be loosely unraveled there. I think that's really, really cool.
It would be interesting to see how many babies are born with a nuchal mm-hmm. cord. Because mm-hmm. I think that, you know, those heart D cells there at the end can be a cause of concern unless we know that, you know, it's just the shortening of the cord as they're, you know, being born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think that it would be awesome to see. I also think that it would be kind of hard to find, you know, like hard to track, because you can say in an ultrasound, yeah, I think it's around his neck, but then there's no guarantee. And then they're like, oh, it's not, they're not born with a nuchal cord. So, you know, but that would be definitely interesting. That kind of makes me think of the cords that come out with knots in them. Have you ever seen that? Yeah, I've only seen it in real life twice, but I was just like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. It's crazy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you wonder kind of what kind of acrobatics they are mm-hmm. performing in order to have that happen.
Yeah, exactly. And remind me about how far apart your kiddos are.
Our first sons are 2.5 years, and then between the youngest is just 2 years.
Okay, yeah. I was just thinking of, you had mentioned uterine rupture, and it sounds like you also went by the kind of like the guidelines of when to get pregnant again after a C-section, which I believe is like 18 to 24 months, right?
Yeah, and as I was consulting with our midwife after the birth of our first son, you know, mm-hmm. she mentioned that it was 24 months. And mm-hmm. I think if you look on ACOG's website, it says 18 as well. And mm-hmm. I asked her, well, is that from birth to birth or from, you know, birth to pregnancy, conception? Mm-hmm. And so they were a little bit further apart because of that. Mm-hmm. You know, she had encouraged us to wait just a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. She encouraged you to wait from even becoming pregnant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the ACOG guidelines, you know, like show from birth to birth, and she had mentioned that to avoid uterine rupture, you know, you could space them out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. That's awesome. And did you do any extra preparation or research? You know, you were saying you did a lot of research. Anything specific about uterine rupture or things like that when you're preparing for your second labor?
I started studying VBACs like it was my full-time job.
Nice.
I really felt like it was something that I needed to take control of, like as much as I could. And mm-hmm. so I started, you know, studying papers and, you know, just reading, you know, like white papers and summaries of them, trying to get as much information from individuals who had experienced this themselves. There are so many wonderful podcasts out there and, you know, different people who are sharing their stories. And so I tried to read every book. I tried to listen to every expert that I could, you know, just to see kind of what happens. And there's a lot of really great advice, you know, like as far as, you know, you could eat dates to, you know, to help things, or you can add some extra pineapple, you know, doing curb walking. I think there's a lot of like practical ways that you can prepare. But as I continued to like dive deeper into it, especially after the birth of our third son, I realized that all of those things can just be really negated without the mental preparation, without getting your heart and your mind aligned and like ready for whatever will happen during your birth. And that's a challenge, to release that control over an event that is so important. I absolutely can't blame people for like wanting an induction or wanting to schedule, because just that unknown, not knowing when your baby's going to come, and will it be a couple days late? Will it come early? There's so much mystery to that. And you have to find something deep inside of yourself that just says, you know, like, it's okay. Whenever they choose to come, you know, like the time will be right. And all of the physiological elements that take place within your body for that timing to occur. It was so magical as I started reading and learning more about, you know, the process of that, that I realized like it's worth the wait.
I think that that is a very, very good point of that, like, you know, your mindset really does contribute to how your labor process progresses and how you do throughout your labor. Because it's a very psychological thing. Yes, it is very physical, but I have also told many of my clients that birth is just as psychological as it is physical, because you are physically working and you're feeling the sensations, but your mind is reacting to all of those sensations, which is why the verbiage that you use also matters. Like if you're like, oh my gosh, this hurts so bad, like why is this happening to me, versus, oh my gosh, my body is so strong, I can do this. It really, really, really changes. That's why affirmations are really awesome, because they're all positive words that are being, you know, repeated to you and kind of like fed into your mind while you're in this very, very vulnerable place.
It makes all the difference. In this whole journey, I have actually started writing what I hope will someday be a book. I have quite a bit written, you know, but who knows about like the publication process and everything, or maybe I'll just give it to like for free to all my friends and family. But I actually have a little snippet that I thought would be perfect that relates just to that. And it's about having those thoughts within yourself that, you know, promote strength and courage. So I wrote, every thought is a message you are sending to your body that either confirms your strength or minimizes it. Are you feeding messages of weakness and doubt, or are you reaffirming that you have no fear of pain? You are capable. You can remain relaxed because you know that as you lean into your contractions, you are opening the passageway for your baby to descend down and out. As your labor approaches, remind yourself that your strength within is enough to birth your baby. You are strong enough. You are patient enough. You are wise enough. You are enough.
Oh, that is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. I love that so much. And everything that you said in that snippet is, it's nothing but positive energy, you know, positive words, positive energy, and very much in encouragement and affirming to oneself that you're enough, you're capable, and you're strong, regardless of what the outside world tells you, regardless of what decisions you make throughout your labor. You know, because some people feel like, oh my gosh, if I get the epidural, I failed, you know, like this, I'm a failure. And I always tell my clients that, you know, going unmedicated, there's no trophy at the end, you know, versus like when you're medicated, when you're not, the outcome is still the most important outcome is that you are happy, you feel safe, and that your baby is also happy and healthy, you know, as best as you can possibly make that happen. So I think that is amazing. And one day when that book does come out, because I have this feeling that book will come out, I would love to read it. And I would love a copy as well. I'll buy it.
Absolutely. You're so sweet. I really hope that I can just share that message of positivity and the power that can come when we understand that mm-hmm. all of the tools that, you know, modern medicine offer us are for our benefit. Mm-hmm. But there's also some roadblocks that I think occur because we start to believe that we can't do it without them. Mm-hmm. And from the beginning of time, you know, women have been having children. And, you know, for a hospital to tell you that you might not be able to have this baby, you know, if you don't get an IV and if you don't get, you know, mm-hmm. an epidural or whatever it is that they're, you know, trying to adhere to, we can go back to that knowledge mm-hmm. that before any of that existed, our bodies like contained everything necessary to birth our baby. And, mm-hmm. and like you said, you're not a failure if you choose that route. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never want anybody to think that I am opposed to the, you know, the wonders that modern medicine gives to us, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to like the life-saving measures of a C-section or mm-hmm. of a transfusion or, mm-hmm. you know, like there's so many heart-wrenching and sad stories that you hear mm-hmm. in this realm of birth. But I think a lot of us can kind of like, we mask what is within us by the messages that are external. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that are telling us you've got a big baby, like they're not going to fit, or yeah. you're overdue, your baby's never going to come. Mm-hmm. And we have to believe that, you know, what is within us is created perfectly, you know, to have the experience of a lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
And if there are problems that, you know, that happen, then we go to plan B, you know, that's when we get out the forceps.
Right. If needed, right? Yeah. For 100%. And I like the way that you phrase that in saying that all of the modern wonders that we have in our medical system are there for our benefit because, you know, exactly what you said, we are kind of, at least around me, people around me in modern day, a lot of women or birthing people are thinking that they can't do it without it. And that's a really great way to put that because we are capable, but we just also have to realize that we're not opposed to any of the options or medical resources that are out there, but it can also be dangerous, like more dangerous for some, you know, it could be a little bit more of a, not the safest option for some families. And then it could be the best option for some families. So there's such a wide spectrum of who, what, when, where, why, and how people birth their babies. So I love that. I like that.
And I think that's the tricky part too, is that like your medical provider, they've got so much more knowledge, right, than mm-hmm. any of us do. And they're getting cues, they're looking at signs and symptoms for you and your baby, and they're able to help steer you so that you do have that wonderful outcome, you know, of a happy mother, mm-hmm. a healthy baby, you know, like a great situation. And unfortunately, there are just some logistics, I think, that kind of maybe get in the way of what could happen if like if there was no shift change or if there was mm-hmm. no holidays and weekends, you know, like you hear right. those stories of someone saying, well, let's go ahead and induce, like, you know, you're probably ready for that baby to come. And inductions can be wonderful, right? Like if you've got high mm-hmm. blood pressure and you have a risk of developing preeclampsia or, you know, like mm-hmm. HELLP or any of those other things that are dangers for you and your baby, like, yes, let's use all of those interventions to our benefit. But I think all too often, modern providers aren't helping women to have a physiological birth. Mm-hmm. And so they don't recognize just kind of like what that can empower someone to feel when they birth their baby that way, when they mm-hmm. feel like they're the owner of their experience, when they are in control of the decisions that they're making mm-hmm. instead of having somebody else who dictates what will happen, why it will be happening, when it will be happening mm-hmm. for them or to them.
Right. Yeah. I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I think that that's a really good segue into our final three questions that I'll be asking, which is, the first one is, what advice would you give to families as they are preparing for labor and birth?
Oh, I love that question. I feel like my whole life has just revolved around, you know, the preparation that can take place as we get ready to welcome a new little spirit into your home. I do think that the first is a mental awareness, and that comes with education, you know, so learning as much as you can, as much as you feel comfortable in knowing. You know, I think individuals who are nurses themselves or who are midwives themselves, they get better care because the people who are attending for them know, you know, like kind of where they're at intellectually. And so if each of us can just arm ourselves with that knowledge of what could be, you know, like we're gonna have great experiences. I think back to my own first baby, and if I knew then what I know now, I probably would have asked for a Foley bulb, right? I would have been hey, I'm not dilated at all. Like, it's been 4 hours. Nothing has changed. Like, can we try this option? Right. And because at the time, like, I was kind of set on like this non-intervention birth, you know, like the thought of Pitocin wasn't pleasing to me. And like, you know, I never got the epidural because I didn't want that kind of birth. And yet, like, looking back now, it's like, if my main goal was to have a vaginal delivery, then a Foley bulb would have been perfect to just help manually dilate my cervix, you know, something that wasn't happening because of the position of my son's head. And so getting all of the education that we can, you know, like even understanding some of the codes for insurance and, you know, like some of the protocols that a hospital has, so that when they inform us of, you know, something that's going to be going on, we can really ask the right questions and kind of advocate for ourselves if necessary.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's great advice, is to just make sure that you have education. And I like what you said on saying that, like, going back to your first birth, if you knew what you knew now, you would have been asking different questions. You would have been asking for different things and paying attention to different things throughout your labor. And I think it's important because you made a point in saying that, like, at that point, you were just so focused on having no interventions in that birth. And being hyper-focused on that made it to where you didn't even want to research them as possibilities, you know?
Yes, exactly. And I took a hypnobirthing class before our first baby was born. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was incredible. Like, she gave us all of that power to, you know, read our scripts and to stay calm. And, you know, the staff, I think, was really shocked that my contractions were as powerful as they were, because I was in a state of hypnosis. Like, I was able to manage everything myself. And yet, you know, one of the pieces of advice that I shouldn't have followed was when she said, like, we're not going to research about C-sections. We're going to skip that chapter because you're not going to have a C-section. And I can see where she's coming from, you know, like trying to use the power of positive thought, you know, and like not getting so fixated on the problems. But as I have now experienced, you know, three very different births, I would definitely encourage everybody to research everything and to know what options are available in any scenario. Right? Like, if you can say that as you walk down one path, you know, there's maybe three options, maybe four options, and to know like what comes when you take some of those options, I think is powerful. I think that information can really arm us with what we need. As far as more preparation though, too, I think that, you know, like surrendering to our bodies. So as I studied like some of the main causes for C-section, I felt like there was this correlation with how labor starts and progresses. So we know that like your cervix has to dilate. We know that your baby has to get in the right position, you know, like everything has to align there. And then you've got to have the hormones like within you and within your baby to make it all possible. And there was a study that was talking about the rise of C-sections. And it said that the main three reasons was for a C-section was labor arrest, you know, meaning like your cervix isn't dilating anymore. Your fetal tracings. So like if your hormones aren't causing a contraction that's strong enough, then your baby or maybe your response to those, you know, like won't be in line. and then the positioning of the baby. So mm-hmm. for me, like my C-section was because of malpresentation. Mm-hmm. You know, he was sunny side up. And I thought, oh, this is so interesting how like all three of those things just directly correlate with the C-section, because, you know, they're the three pillars of labor. That's exactly what has to happen for your baby to be born. And so if one of those things doesn't happen or is off, you know, then you might need a C-section to mm-hmm. help you with that. Or you might just need to make sure your body's in a different position, helping your baby to shift and rotate, you know. So there's a lot of things, I think, as we embrace a midwifery model of care with, you know, the doctors that are doing everything they can to help these babies, you know, come to earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that. I think that's really, really good overall advice, but also just really good information to have as a pregnant person in general. My next question is, so I have two questions for you. My next one is, do you have any resources that I can share with the listeners on your behalf? I will, of course, share the Birth Made Mindful website as a resource. Is there anything else you would like to share?
Oh, I would love to. We do have courses on our website. We're also offering affirmation cards that are found on Etsy and Amazon. But I have like a really cute printout of those affirmations as well that I can include in your show notes for listeners to just have the, you know, the power of those positive thoughts as they're preparing for labor and delivery.
Yeah, perfect. That would be great. Thank you. So the final thing I would ask is, out of all three of these experiences, after experience all three pregnancies, labors, births, and postpartums, what is one word that you would use to describe your overall experience?
I think the word that I love to use when it comes to my birth is elated, because that's really how I felt, like with each baby that was placed in my arms and feeling that sense of profound knowing, right? Like just feeling like I know you so well, and now you are a part of me, and I get to, you know, like I get to help shape your whole world, you know, like, oh man, parents have such a huge responsibility to be everything as our children start off, you know, their lives. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of a burden, you know, when we think about it that way. There's a lot.
Yes, a little bit a lot. But that's a great way to explain parenting. Oh, a little also goes a long way with parenting too, because you got to repeat it. You got to repeat a little bit of things a lot of the time.
That's right. And even though it's hard to feel like we have to be everything for them all of the time, I think back to, you know, like the mantra that I had for my third labor, like, I just want to do everything with love. Mm-hmm. And that can be our motto for parenting as well. Just making sure that our hearts are full of love and our intentions have love behind them, you know, because it can be hard as children are challenging you and trying to find their own voice, you know, just helping them see that the whole thing is all about love.
Yeah, 100%. Communication is also key. Being open to hearing what your little voices have to say is important too. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that people will connect with us so we can continue to share, you know, the positive birth stories that each woman needs to share. I think there's so much power when an individual can share her story or his story and, you know, just let the world know that there isn't a right or a wrong way to birth, and that every single individual, you know, like, this is the most important day of their life. You know, the first day of their life is such an important event. And celebrating how they came into the world, who was there, you know, and giving credit to everybody who made it happen. You know, like, I never want my story to feel like healthcare providers are the villain, you know, like that's absolutely not the message that I ever have. Even though sometimes you do have to navigate some of the specifics when it comes to birth, you know, but everybody is here to be a team and to help these little babies thrive.
Right. Yes, I agree. 100%. Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, no problem. Interviewing Sarah for this podcast episode was a ton of fun, and it was so interesting, and it was just amazing because there were so many different things that popped up for her that just worked out in her favor. For example, having that last minute switch of a provider and ending up with her VBAC and then actually going to a chiropractor in the middle of labor. How amazing is that? I wish that we could have resources like that for everybody that needed them, and that everybody's births have a positive experience even if they don't go as planned. Speaking of resources, Sarah has generously offered all of the Birth As We Know It listeners a 30% off discount code for all of her Birth Made Mindful online courses. The code is Birth As We Know It, BIRTHASWEIT. So go ahead and check her out at her website link in the show notes. Next week, we're doing something a little bit different, and I'm really excited about it because I had the opportunity to interview my sister Monet while she was still pregnant. During this interview, we talk about how her pregnancy's been going, some of the symptoms she's been experiencing, as well as what her hopes and expectations are for labor and birth. Now, this will be a two-part series, so this will be the first part of her episode recording, and you'll have to come back and hear her second episode after she has her baby so we can hear about if it went as she expected. So tune in next week so you don't miss out on the precursor of her birth story. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode today. Don't hesitate to share this with your family and friends. If you liked this episode, feel free to leave a review so my podcast can pop up for others and they can see and listen to it as well. If you have a birth story or experience you would want to share on the Birth As We Know It podcast, head over to kionanessenbaum.com and fill out the guest request form. That is kionanessenbaum.com. I look forward to connecting with you again soon. Bye for now.